And we are live with no internet difficulty this time. We're already off to a monumental start. welcome, everybody, to the Lakers Outsiders podcast. I'm your host, Gary Kester. Joining me today are the two usual knuckleheads I seem to have on here now. on my right is Kyle. Kyle, what's going on, man? How you holding up in the blizzard out there?
I'm surviving. I got home okay. It's just a, 15, 20-minute drive turned into a 40, 45-minute drive, so
you know how it goes. Did you just ice skate home?
Basically, yeah. It was, I guess I just needed to man up and get home so I could do this.
Right, just quit being soft, get home. Yeah. I really should talk because it's, like, been frigid here in Boise, too, and there's, like, snow everywhere, and yeah, so. Also joining me today is Hani. Hani, is it snowing where you're at, too? Or are you just dealing with the earthquakes?
No, it snowed last week, snowed a little bit today. I think it's snowing tomorrow. All sorts of snow.
So you haven't had an earthquake since our last podcast?
I had one that day as an aftershock, if that counts.
I'll count that. That's fair. I've never been through an earthquake in my hometown, so. In Hawaii, though. So. Okay, so in case you guys all missed it, the Lakers lost again. You know, same story, different day. Lakers, I think, dropped to 5-27. That feels like 5 in infinity now, but they lost to the Hornets, 108-98. Kemba Walker had 38 points, 18 in the fourth quarter. So let's just break it down. Those of you that didn't watch, and I posted this on the site, Michael Jordan gave a video tribute to Kobe Bryant, seeing as it was Kobe's last game at Charlotte. Hani, I'll start with you. What were kind of your takeaways from that tribute that Michael gave Kobe?
First thing was Michael Jordan having insanely red eyes, as usual. second thing was, I saw somebody else tweet this, I don't remember who it was, but Michael Jordan calling Kobe his little brother, which I think was kind of funny because Kobe's been the guy that calls himself the big brother to, like, literally every teammate he's ever had. So I thought that was pretty funny. It's like one giant family.
Yeah. Well, it's funny to, you know, see Kobe as a little brother when Kobe's almost 40 years old now.
Yeah,
you know?
So, that's also true.
Like, he's getting old. I don't know. Kyle, did you get a chance to see the video?
Yeah, I saw the video, and I just think it's really cool. You know, one of my favorite players growing up, because I grew up a Bulls fan, so I used to have a Michael Jordan, you know, poster hanging above my bed. It was just really cool to see, you know, probably the greatest player of all time pay tribute to another, you know, probably another one of the greatest players of all time. So it was just really, really cool, you know, seeing all of that, and, you know, I want Michael Jordan's number, I guess. You know, I call him, ask him how I can improve my podcasting skills, but, yeah.
My favorite bit was the whole, he's like, not many people know this, but Charlotte drafted Kobe originally. He's like, oh, no, we know. Like, we know how dumb you guys were for trading him away. And probably not a good thing to remind Hornets fans of, especially, you know, with a sellout crowd, like, hey, we drafted this guy that won 5 titles and he's going to be a Hall of Famer. And we traded him for Vlade Divac. So, just wanted to remind you guys of that. it was a pretty cool tribute, though. You could tell just kind of the bond that Jordan and Kobe have kind of developed over the years, starting with that game early on in Kobe's career where Kobe was asking him how to, you know, how he hits his fadeaway jumper and kind of how he shoots it and stuff like that. So it was really cool stuff to see. But okay, so now we'll turn our attention to the game. It was a competitive game most of the way, really, really close. Hornets kind of pulled away down the stretch. As I mentioned, Kemba Walker had a big fourth quarter. But really it was Kobe that kind of, I mean, things kind of fell apart in the fourth quarter. Hani, just talk about, I mean, what happened in the fourth quarter and what the Lakers should have done.
I think there's a couple things. One was pulling out D'Angelo Russell when he was kind of starting to get a rhythm, which, I mean, he struggled a little bit early on, especially in the second half. But then once he started getting rhythm, for some reason, as soon as he made one really great play in transition, he got pulled. And basically the offense died after that because Clarkson wasn't able to get anything going. Kobe started chugging shot after shot, that, and none of them were going in. Lou Williams with his second really bad game in a row. So they were basically not able to get anything going. And then on the other end, transition defense being terrible as usual and nobody being able to get guard Kemba Walker, basically.
Yeah, it was. It honestly reminded me of just kind of the old Laker days, you know, where the team would just, you know, feed Kobe in the post or just run an ISO for him and just, you know, be like, here, try and bail us out, you know, down the stretch of a game, and just kind of went away from the. I mean, because they moved the ball pretty well most of the game. I think they had a decent amount of assists, but yeah. But yeah, it's kind of been the story all year for Russell. It seems like as soon as he gets going, Byron just. He's like, nope, like, let's not get ahead of ourselves here. Like, you're still a rookie, so sit down. And, yeah, it's kind of frustrating. But, Kyle, I'll throw this one to you. Do you think it's just more beneficial for the Lakers to close with Kobe on the bench? Or if, you know, if he's got it going, do you think they should just keep him out there to finish games?
Well, I'll say this for your sake, because you have a game coming up that you're going to go see. I want to see Kobe on the bench finishing out games if he wants to last the remainder of the season. Like, if he wants to play at every stadium this year, like it looks like he wants to, if he wants to have that see you later guys kind of feel, I feel like he should definitely go to Byron and be like, hey, I need reduced minutes. I'm old. I'm tired. My shots aren't falling some of the times because I'm just beat. And I'm just really afraid that if they don't start sitting him in the fourth quarter or, you know, getting him into a rhythm with his minutes, that he's going to get an injury out of it. And, you know, we just don't want that.
Yeah, that's my thing, because I'm going to see him in less than a month when the Lakers go to Portland. You know, I want to see Kobe play, but I don't need to see him play 35 minutes in that game. You know, if he plays 24, 25 minutes, that's completely fine. I'm kind of there to see the young guys play too. And, you know, I would love to see Kobe actually make it that far first and foremost. And, you know, he's coming off, you know, he has a knee injury he's dealing with right now. Tonight was the second night of a back-to-back. Like, the Lakers have, you know, he's played a lot of games this year to this point. They asked, I think it was John Ireland asked Byron after the game, like, what his strategy was for managing Kobe's minutes. He's like, oh, I wanted to keep him in that 30, 31, 32-minute range. It's like, dude, like, he's hurt, and he's old. Like, you should be keeping him at, like, 21, 22. Like, I mean, like, a two-quarter limit almost. So, yeah, it's frustrating. But I think it's – would you guys both agree that it's more frustrating that Russell and Randall have – been sitting down the stretch as opposed to just Kobe playing?
Yeah. And then, like, especially tonight with Russell, because he was playing well. And then Randall was also playing well. I didn't hate it too much that he was sitting, because Nance was just probably the better player today, even though they could have tried doing Randall and Nance at the same time. But with Russell, I mean, you weren't playing a better player ahead of him today, so I don't see why he needed to sit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just frustrating, but I mean, we've been putting up with it for over a third of the season so far, and I don't know if it's going to change anytime soon. So, did you guys have anything else you wanted to add on the game as far as, I mean, just what we saw tonight?
I guess really just my thing before the game was wondering why Lou Williams was, you know, starting, and, you know, I think he ended up playing, let me see, he played 38 minutes tonight. And he was probable for the game tonight on a sore shoulder, I believe. And I just don't think that the best way to rehab one of your players is playing him 38 minutes a night. And especially because he's been having these rough nights lately, he could have easily deferred to Russell or Clarkson or, you know, even, God forbid, Marcel Huertas down the stretch, because he's your fourth quarter catalyst. But
yeah, I was gonna say, that's his nickname now, the catalyst.
Yeah. I just think Byron needs to do a better job, and it's not going to happen, but I'm going to say it for the sake of saying it. Byron needs to do a better job of adjusting his rotations mid-game. You know, if Bass, Nance, and Randall are all having a good game like they did tonight, maybe try playing, you know, one of them or two of them at the same time. I know they're all power forwards, but you seem to like the smaller lineups. Maybe try Nance at the 5 and Randle at the 4 or reverse. You know, I don't know how that would work, but
yeah,
it's worth a try when you're 5 and 27. So
let's put Huertas at the 5. I mean, if he's a catalyst, he's going to be a catalyst in any position. So let's do this thing. No, it's frustrating, but you know, that's why they are what they are. So, all right, so we'll transition to Wednesday's game. Wednesday's a big game. It's actually one of the more highly anticipated matchups for the Lakers this season. They travel to Boston on Wednesday, and this, as everybody probably can figure out, since this is Kobe's last year, this is his last game playing at the TD Garden in Boston. And I'm just going to ask you guys, we're not going to really preview the game. I just want to ask you, and Hani, I'll start with you, what's your favorite Kobe moment in the TD Garden in Boston?
Oh, geez. I don't know. I don't remember if this was in the TD Garden. You'll know because it's your Twitter avatar. But the shot he hit on Shaq when Shaq was on Boston, he got the N1 and he turns and just stares at him.
Oh yeah, that's my avatar. Yeah, that was in LA, but
that was a even though he's won a championship playing in Boston, I'm pretty sure that's my favorite against Boston memory.
Yeah. Kyle, do you have a favorite Kobe in Boston moment?
Unfortunately, because you know I just started being a Lakers fan not too long ago, I don't have too many, you know, favorite moments for Kobe because, you know, Kobe was the enemy for the longest time. But if I had to pick one moment that I remember from Kobe, specifically against the Celtics, it's probably be the 2010 championship, Game 7, which wasn't at the Garden. It was at Staples Center. So, sorry I'm a bit disappointing there, but...
You're both letting me down. This is why you guys are rookies being benched.
Right.
You guys are way too soft right now.
Give us the game plan.
The game plan. I bet you in the locker room on Byron's like whiteboard, he just writes, "Don't be soft."
Man up.
I've got two favorite Kobe memories in Boston that I can think of just off the top of my head. The first one I think was in 2007. He threw down like one of his patented reverse, like almost windmill dunks, and it's like one of my favorite dunks. And then he ended up getting MVP chance in the Garden, which was was awesome. That's one of my favorite all-time Kobe moments, just because he lit him up. I think he like hit a three from just inside the half-court line at the end of the third quarter or something, and the Lakers won. So that was a great moment. And the other one, to me, is I think it was 2009-2010 season where he hit the game-winning shot with about 7 seconds left over Ray Allen, and the Lakers won that game by one. That was a great moment because that was one of like six game winners for him that year. And it was sweet to beat that group in Boston again. So those are my two favorite Kobe moments in the Garden. So hopefully he gives us another great one on Wednesday. Okay, so we got a bunch of questions. Since this is Monday, we try and do this as many Mondays as we can. We call it Mailbag Monday. We just take your guys' questions, and this is the first time I think we're actually just answering them on the podcast and not writing about them. So the first question comes from Jacob Rude, who is a Lakers outsider, kind of, sort of, I guess. I refuse to officially let him in because he's a Duke fan, but he asks, Vikings or Packers this Sunday? Kyle, I'll throw this to you because I know you hate both teams.
Well, my dad is a Packers fan, so I feel like I have to go with the Vikings here. just because I like seeing my dad get so much hope and then see it all crushed before him, like when the Bears beat the Packers and Lambeau this season. So.
And you and my dad are like, your relationship with your dad's the opposite of mine. Like, my dad's a Redskins fan, and I'm like an honorary Redskins fan because Tennessee is so terrible. So I was kind of psyched that they clinched the division. Sorry, Hani, I know you're a Cowboys fan, but
yeah, okay.
I don't hate the Cowboys either. I mean, especially since, you know, Kellen Moore is the quarterback right now, so Yeah. Who do you got between Vikings and Green Bay this Sunday?
I got the Packers just to take Jacob off even more.
I like it. I'm actually, you know what? I'm going to take the Packers just because he's a Duke fan. I might be totally wrong, and you know the Vikings actually won me a pizza this year because I bet that they'd go 9-7 or better, and won that bet. So, but yeah, I'm going with the Packers just for you, Jacob. Okay, so that's okay. I think that's the only NFL related question we have. Okay, so the next question is about free agency, and we kind of touched on this I think the last time, but it's just what, and Hani, we'll go back to you on this one. What are your opinions on maxing out either or Harrison Barnes and or Hassan Whiteside?
Yeah, we talked about Whiteside a little bit last time. I think Whiteside, I'm a little skeptical of how good he really is. I think a lot of it has to do with his athleticism and length. I think I would still max him out just because the Lakers need his sort of play. Harrison Barnes is also a tricky one. I like his game more than Whiteside's, and I think he fits really well with LA too. The only thing I have a little bit of doubt on is that he's a restricted free agent, so I'm not sure if Golden State's going to let him go or not.
Yeah. Kyle, if you had to choose one, which one would you take?
See, my answer was going to be max all the players. We have the cap room.
Let's max Marcelo Huertas.
You know what? If we keep the pick, let's say we keep the pick and we draft either like Brandon Ingram or Scalabissiere, I would want Hassan Whiteside and Brandon Ingram rather than Harrison Barnes and Labissiere. So I'm going to go ahead and say max Hassan Whiteside and then draft Brandon Ingram.
Okay. Yeah, I'd agree that I'd prefer that combo as well. As far as the pick goes, I was thinking about this when I was driving to work today because it was just one of those random thoughts that popped in my head. I'm not really expecting the Lakers to keep this pick, even though it looks like they're going to have the second worst record in the league. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know, I'm almost preparing for them to not have the pick because it's kind of a coin flip odd anyways. But if it happens, like, great, but I'm kind of looking more so towards free agency. Personally, I would choose Harrison Barnes, which is a shocker. As a North Carolina fan, I would choose the Tar Heel. but no, I've always liked Barnes' game. I think in terms of individual production, he's kind of hindered a little bit with Golden State because he's like the third or fourth option on offense most times. Yeah. So, I don't know. I think he could – I mean, the Lakers are going to need a small forward badly. So I think that would be – you know, a great guy to get, but it's going to take a max deal. Plus, he's restricted, so it would be really tough to get. Personally, I wouldn't max Hassan Whiteside. I'd give him a lot of money, but I don't think I'd give him a max contract because I'm skeptical of his overall skill set, especially offensively, but I'm more skeptical of his attitude because, you know, like I mentioned last time, his emotions are just, they seem to be all over the place. So that'll be fun though when July rolls around. We'll see what the Lakers do. I know one guy they're gonna go after, but we'll see who else they go after. So, okay, this question is about the Phoenix Suns. So here's the question: what would you guys say to Phoenix since they might go after Luke Walton amid all the turmoil with Jeff Hornacek right now? Kyle, what would you say to Phoenix?
Back off, our boy. You can't have him. Shout out to Ty for that question. But yeah. Back off, basically. Get away. We'll trade you Byron for him. You can have Byron.
Yeah. Hani, what would you say to him?
I'd tell him we'll keep Kobe from getting retired just so he can keep kicking their butts every game after game.
I would just say, yeah, you remember the Steve Nash trade? You guys can go straight to hell. Like, we gave you 4 draft picks for that guy. So you can give us a head coach. Oh, Phoenix. My hatred still burns deep for that team after the back-to-back playoff series. Okay, so back to our team. This question is, what do you think are the ceilings for basically the Lakers' young guys, Russell, Clarkson, Randall, and Larry Nance? And Hani, we'll start with you.
I don't know, this is a tough question to answer, but I would say if I were to basically rank them ceiling-wise, I'd say Russell and Randall are kind of like neck and neck with me. I think both of them are going to be really, really good players, like multiple all-star game-level players. Clarkson, I don't think he has that much of a higher ceiling than he's at right now. I think he'll obviously get better. He can be a really much better defender. He can keep working on his shooting because that's kind of tailed off a little bit. And then Nance, I think, even though he's playing really well, I think he tails off as like a really good bench guy.
Right, right. And I'd pretty much agree with that. So, Kyle, do you have anything different in terms of how you'd rank each of their respective ceilings?
I think that
we're not talking apartment ceilings either. Like
right. All right. No, it's like 10 feet high, and then, you know, no. Yeah. I think that Nance has a lot of room that he can improve on as well. I kind of disagree with Hani there. I think Nance could definitely be a starter. Maybe not necessarily on our team, unfortunately, though. Like, I'm not saying shop Nance or anything. You know, I love the kid. But, you know, if free agency rolls around and, you know, he's continued on this path that he's been on, if the Lakers don't have enough money to sign him, he could very well walk and go to another team and produce there as well. So I think he has starter capabilities, but I mostly agree with you on the rest of them, you know, all-stars for Russell and Randall. And then Clarkson's kind of a wild card at this point. I think he can definitely continue as a starter. That's obvious, but he definitely has some flaws that the teams are starting to capitalize as, you know, more film from him is showing up.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and just rank them real quick. For me personally, I think Russell could be a superstar. I really think he could be an elite, like top 10, top 5 player in this league in maybe 3 to 5 years. I think he could be so good. Randall, I think, can be an all-star caliber player, although I think Russell's ceiling's higher. Clarkson, I think, can be like a really good starter, but not quite an all-star. Although it wouldn't surprise me with like the LA vote and all that he would become an all-star at least once in his career. But I think he's a good starter. And then Nance, I think he could be a good starter too, but I think the more likely scenario is maybe he's like a sixth man. I think he's a good rotation player for sure. But I think he could be like just a really, really good sixth man, first guy off the bench. So, okay. So the next question is I guess since we're on the subject of Larry Nance, what do you think of Randall now that Nance has been playing so well, and do you think the Lakers need to switch back with Randall back in the starting lineup still? Kyle, go ahead. We'll start with you on this one.
I'm so very conflicted on this because, you know, I really want Randall to start and get that playing time. But the way that Nance has been playing, and you know, at the level he's been playing, he also kind of needs this playing time too. If there was a way, like I said earlier in the podcast, that we could play them both at the same time, that's ideal. But I don't think, in my opinion, I don't think we should switch back just yet. I don't think we will anyways. You know, Byron said that they'll probably sit on the bench for the rest of the year, meaning Russell and Randall. But yeah, I think that Nance has definitely deserved to be where he's at, and that's one of the ones that I agree with.
Yeah, Hani, would you agree that they should keep it as is, or do you think Randall should be starting?
I get the idea of Nance has been playing really well with the starters, especially the last two games, and I wouldn't, you know, hate if he kept starting, but I think I'd prefer Randall starting, same with D'Angelo, just because I think Russell, Clarkson, and Randall should get as many minutes together as possible since they're supposed to be playing together for a really long time. And I think Randall's like clearly been much better when he's played with the starters. He's played with other guys that can just take defenders away from him. So I think it would help his game, help his confidence, since it's kind of tailed off a little bit the last few weeks. But yeah, it's not a huge deal to me as long as they both get plenty of minutes.
Yeah, and that's the thing, and I'm glad you mentioned Randall's confidence. I was watching his interview after the game, and man, he just seems so defeated. You know, they ask him, like, you know, what his mindset is. He's like, just be aggressive. It's all I can do. I mean, you could just tell he's just frustrated. It could be a product of losing, but, you know, when he was starting, like you said, he was playing really well. I mean, he had, like, the Dallas game, for example, he had 22 and 15. You know, and he had a couple other really big games, and you know, I think the guy that has the higher ceiling, which to me is Randall, should be the one starting, getting the majority of the minutes. But I do agree with you, Kyle, that they should honestly experiment with Nance and Randall on the court together, because Nance is athletic enough, and Randall's a good athlete too, that you can honestly run with that. I mean, if you can run with Brandon Bass at the center, you can run with Larry Nance Jr.
True.
Or Randall at the center. So.
I think, just real quick, Gary, I think that Randall's confidence, or lack thereof, lately isn't necessarily coming off of the bench, because coming off of the bench isn't as big of a deal if you have a coach telling you why you're coming off of the bench and what you are doing well, and instead of calling you soft and not being aggressive every night. I think that's getting him more down in the dumps than it is just, oh, I'm not starting. I need to be starting. Yeah. I think that's kind of his mentality, is he's not getting enough, you know, positive, constructive feedback, whereas he's just getting beat down every night. So I guess, like, I agree, like, you know, he needs to get his confidence back, but I don't think it's necessarily, like, hand-in-hand with the starting.
I think it's a combination of things. You know, as a 19- or 20-year-old, like Russell and Randall are, to always be like the guy on the team, like the number one option, the star, and then to start right away, and like especially in Russell's case, starting to play well, and then you get benched. I mean, that just, as somebody so young, that's going to mess with your emotions and your confidence, and, you know, that's just kind of screwing with their psyche. So, yeah, but it's, I would agree, it's probably, you know, a number of things that go into it, not just, you know, one thing or the other, so. We get this question just about every podcast, I think. So I just want you guys to just throw out a name. We don't need to explain it. We've explained like every name possible. But if you're going to fire Byron Scott, which coach would you hire besides Luke Walton?
Has to be somebody that's available-ish, or else I'd say Greg Popovich. one of the names that's kind of coming up right now is Jeff Hornacek, and Hornacek, I don't know. I still don't know. Hornacek, okay. And I think he'd be an all right guy to get. He's been pretty good developing a couple young guys on in Phoenix, and he did a really good job with a mediocre team his first year. They got like 48 wins or something when nobody expected that. So I think he'd be a decent guy to look at.
Yeah. Kyle, who'd be your guy?
All right, I have co-coaches here because apparently we can do that now. But I think they need to hire Gary Kester and Harrison Fagan. That's the future of the Lakers right there.
Oh, man, if you think the turmoil is bad with the coaching staff now, Harrison and I would constantly be at each other's throats. would we be co-head coaches? Because, like, I don't want to be an assistant to Harrison.
No, you're co-head coaches. You're both standing up in the box and, you know, making calls.
You can both be player coaches.
I can play about as good of defense as Marcelo Huertas. So.
Oh, I've seen your highlight reel, Gary. You can do it. You can wear this out for that spot.
Yeah, got him. I mean, I can throw shots. I can throw shots over my head, too. But I'm not the catalyst. So.
Right.
Personally, I'm just going to throw out the guy I would hire, and that's Ettore Messina, assistant coach.
Oh, that's a good one.
So that's who I would go with, but not everybody agrees. So we've got two questions left.
Hold on. We should hire Becky Hammond. I think that'd be interesting, actually.
Somebody did mention that. I would go just with Messina just because of he's got just more experience as a coach. Yeah.
True.
A lot of accolades overseas and things like that. So, okay, so we got two questions left. This is actually a pretty good question. So who deserves more blame for this season? You blame the front office, Byron Scott, and the coaching staff, or the players? Kyle, go ahead.
I think Tom and I decided today that we're going to start blaming the front office for this. Because Byron is who he is, and the front office knew like who he was as a person. And to an extent, you can blame him for all the losses, but the front office has a say. They can put him on the hot seat, but they've been nothing but supportive of him. They haven't said anything like, oh, well, you have 2 weeks or we're going to fire you, like is what's going on in Phoenix. Yeah. So I am starting to blame, you know, the front office, basically. Yeah.
And, Hani, I'll go ahead and let you do a quote-unquote shameless plug here. Yeah. You just wrote about this yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yeah, it was yesterday.
Sure.
I'm getting my days all mixed up, man. But you wrote about this. Go ahead. You can plug your article and kind of just answer which one of those three groups would you blame?
Yeah, so what I wrote about was basically the fact that Byron kind of stinks, but the fact of the matter is that not only just the fact that he doesn't coach well, but the fact that he keeps going out in public and really just shaming his players, that kind of reflects on the front office, because like they met with him halfway through this season after that road trip, and you'd think that if they're not going to tell him that, hey, we're going to fire you, they'd at least be telling him, like, ease it down on the post-game quotes and all this, like, calling them pathetic and soft and all that, but that there's been no real changes to that, and he's still kind of continued doing that. So I still think Byron is the most to blame, just because he's the one really affecting the season, and the front office has done a decent job getting him good players and all of that. But I'm getting closer to the point where it's like the front office has to take some blame for letting it keep happening over and over again.
Yeah, see, I mean, I'm already at that point, really, because kind of what Kyle said, like, you knew what you were getting with Byron Scott, you know, like all of his head coaching jobs have ended horribly, you know, and there's reason for that. You know, there's one constant in all those, and that's him. And, you know, they interviewed the guy like 4 or 5 times, which made me kind of like wonder, is that really your guy? Like, you really got to hire somebody you interviewed 5 times? Like, you know, I don't know. I mean, I blame the front office for it. Like, the players, like, the Lakers are obviously not a very, very talented team. Like, most of their talent is young talent. And, you know, I mean, I blame the front office because ultimately they're the guys that hired Byron Scott. You know, they knew what they were getting into. And, I mean, their free agency approach the last couple of years has been pretty bad. I mean, going after the big fish and just letting all these other guys kind of squander away. So, I'm gonna blame them. You know, not a lot of people are blaming them, but I think that's gonna start to change here, maybe over the course of the season, especially if they have another bad free agency next summer. So, yeah. Okay, this was actually a really interesting question too. So it's about Jordan Clarkson, and this is the last question we've got. Why do you think he's struggling so far this year? Is it injuries? Is it change in role? Different team? What do you guys think it is? Hani, go ahead.
I think the injury has a lot to do with it, because pretty much before the injury, he was playing really well, and as soon as he hurt his ankle, and apparently he's hurt his other ankle too, he's tailed off a little bit, and his shooting has dropped off, which I think probably we should have accepted, because he was shooting way better than last season, and it wasn't sustainable. I think another part of it is just he's asked to handle the ball a lot more now that he's the starting point guard, and he has to basically create for everybody else and get his own shot at the same time, and it's too much for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Kyle, do you have anything you wanted to add?
I think, you know, it's probably mostly injuries there. You know, like Hani said, he had a couple ankle injuries so far this season, but I also think it's just he doesn't have a set like people that he's playing with in the rotation. He's getting all sorts of different guys that he's playing with. It's different night in and night out. And it's just kind of hard to get into a rhythm. when the guys on the floor that you're playing with aren't the same guys from last night before.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, it's been a variety of things. I think, ultimately, I mean, he started the year playing shooting guard next to Russell, and I think that was really good for him. You know, I think having another guy that was going to create, you know, really helped him, and he was healthy. You know, it's no secret, really, that he's declined ever since he got hurt. And I kind of noticed it tonight. There was a couple, like, mid-range jumpers he tried to shoot, and he just didn't have the same lift, you know, especially because I think he twisted his other ankle tonight, and you could just tell he wasn't getting, didn't have the same lift. I mean, he somehow found it when he just obliterated Marvin Williams on that dunk. But, yeah, I think, honestly, you know, playing alongside Kobe, he didn't have to do that a whole lot last year. Like, just, you know, yeah, playing alongside Kobe, a completely new group, and kind of having different roles. Like, he's played shooting guard and point guard this year. So just kind of trying to balance all that, I think, is, you know, while being hurt, has just kind of led to him struggling. But, I mean, ultimately, I'm not really worried about him. I think he'll figure it out. You know, he's just got to get healthy, and I think he'll be okay. So, all right, I think that's going to do it. We answered a lot of questions there. So did you guys have anything else you wanted to add before we sign off?
No,
not really.
All right, well, I'll try and sign off before my internet's actually made it this long.
Yeah, man, this is exciting.
What happens first? My internet cuts out.
Big money.
Yeah, what happens first? My internet cuts out, or Hani has to deal with another earthquake down there in Nevada?
Maybe simultaneous.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here like, what? What's going on?
All right, that's gonna do it for us for this time. We'll try and podcast again after the Boston game on Wednesday. Thanks for everybody that sent in questions today. That was a pretty good group of questions that we got, and thanks for those that followed along. And thank you too for joining me today, so I didn't have to do this thing by myself because I didn't want to do that. But yeah, thank you guys, and we'll see you next time.